We begin the current daf Masech, the Sukkah daf Lamed Aleph. We begin on the second line from the top of the Yamed, where the Gemara continues related discussion to the previous daf. That is, Rav Huna told the Avankari that when you purchase the Hadassim from the Oivdei Kochavim, from the idol worshippers, don't cut it yourself. Let them cut it. And the reason is because we can assume that possibly they stole the ground, and possibly it's a Jewish person's land, which Karka Ein Nigzelus, land is not stolen. Hence, when you're cutting the Hadassim, essentially you're doing the act of theft because it wasn't stolen yet, even though the land was stolen, but you can't steal land. And therefore, either it's going to be a problem for your own Hadassim, a mitzvah baba vera, or it's going to be a problem because you're, although there was Yish before, but Yish itself is not a Kinyan, it has to come with Chin Rishos, and there was never yet a change of possession from when it was stolen because you're the first one stealing it. His act of theft of the ground wasn't considered an act of theft because Karka Ein Nigzelus. Now, therefore, let them cut it, and therefore, they're doing the Avera, and you're not going to mitzvah Avera, and also there's going to be Yish and Shin Rishus when they change possession from them to you, the Avankris. Now, on this concept of that Karka Ein Nigzelus, a Gemara actually discusses that. Tarban Linda Braisa. Now, although we're discussing the previous stuff regarding how that relates to the halachas of Dal Minim, specifically that of Hadassim, now we're going to be discussing how that relates to a Sukkah. So we learned in the Braisa, Sukkah Gezula, a stolen Sukkah. The Hamasachich Birshus Rabbim is someone that puts up a sukkah in the public domain, which is also stealing from the public because it's not your property. So regarding these two cases, Rabbi Eliezer Pais, Rabbi Eliezer holds that's an invalid sukkah. V'acham Machshirim, however, the Chum say it's going to be kosher. Now, Amar Rav Nachman explains this machlekes. He says, machlekes, this that Rabbi Eliezer says is going to be pasul when you steal a sukkah. Well, what is the case talking about when you stole a sukkah? We understand the second case of when you put up a schach, when you put up a sukkah in Rosh Hashanah, you're putting up your own sukkah, but it's not your property. You're stealing from the public. That's a machlekes. What exactly is the case of a stolen sukkah? So Rav Nachman explains, he says, it's when you grab your friend, you pull him up, and you throw him out of his sukkah, which is built on his land. Now, whatever is attached to the ground is like the ground itself. Hence, Rebbe Lezal Tamei, Rebbe Lezal is going according to his opinion, the Amar, which was mentioned earlier, Daf, that Ein Odom Yetzi Dechavase B'Sukkah Shechaver, a person cannot fulfill his chiv of sukkah in somebody else's sukkah. Where he says that even a sukkah shu'ul, even a borrowed sukkah, where you didn't just pull a guy out, you just came and said, can I use your sukkah? Even there, Rebbe Lezal says he will not fulfill your chiv, as the Gemara said in Chav Zayim Abayis, and therefore what's called Meman of Shach, either way you look at this, you cannot fulfill your chiv by pulling out your friend and sitting in his sukkah. Because e karka nigzelas. Now, although we assumed on the previous daf that karka is not nigzelas, here the Gemara says actually that it's a machlikas regarding if karka could be stolen or not. So if you say the ground could be stolen, and therefore, hence we'll say that this ground has halachas of theft, which is like all other movable objects, where then it goes into the domain of the thief. So then, you're right, it's not his, it's yours, but sukkah gzulahi. So that's a stolen sukkah, where Rabbi Elazar made the drasha on the previous daf that tasa lacha, that the sukkah you should make for you, which means from your own, and neither if it's stolen or if it's borrowed, either way it's not being made from your own, because it's coming from someone else's. So for that itself, you won't fulfill your chiv by pulling him out and throwing him out. And even though it's not his anymore, it's yours, but it was stolen, that's not tasa lacha, it was made from his, not from your own. And ve'inami karka ain't an exhaust, and if you assume, as we did on the previous stuff, that ground cannot be stolen, and therefore that means essentially that this sukkah, which is attached to the ground, which has the same halacha like the ground, and ground cannot be stolen, therefore it was his, and therefore you're not fulfilling your chiyuv because it's not your ground, and therefore it's like borrowed ground, borrowed sukkah, where, again, Rabbi Elazar says that you can't use your own, it can't use someone else, it has to be from your own. Now, as Rashi explains that this is actually machlekes, Masechtas Baba Kama, Daf Kavod Zayin Amud Beis. There is an opinion that holds karka is nigzelus. You could steal ground because they understand the psukim in what's called ribu miyut. They darshan the psukim regarding certain halachic principles, which is something that includes, something that diminishes. But then there's another opinion there that says that karka ain't nigzelus, that ground cannot be stolen, which is because they understand the halachas in kalali prati, which means a general statement and specific, which based on the different interpretations of how you expound it, will come out if karka is nigzelus or not nigzelus. So on that, the Gemara is saying that either way, sukkah shulihi, so it's going to be a borrowed sukkah. So again, either way, if you say the ground could be stolen, so it's stolen. Again, it's not locha, it's not made from your own. And if it's not stolen, so it's a borrowed sukkah, even if you just chucked them out, it's still not yours, you're just borrowing it. So either way, it's not going to be yours, and therefore you're not going to fill yechiv. Rabbanon, but Rabbanon that say that such a circle will be kosher. L'tamayu, the army, they're going according to their opinion, again, that we mentioned, of Chavzayim Abayz, that they say, Adam Yitzi Dechavasa B'sukasa Shal Chaver, a person could fulfill his chiyuv with his friend's sukkah, in other words, when he borrows it from him, because they learn that from the pasuk of Kol HaEzrach, which means that all the Jewish people can use one sukkah, no, although they can't be partners in it, because not enough money to be invested in one sukkah. However, you can borrow, and that's where they learn that halach. And they also hold, the karka and the gzelis, they also hold that ground cannot be stolen. That's because the Rabbanah, the ones that say over there, Masechtas Baba Kama, that ground cannot be stolen. And they argue in Rabbi Elazar also regarding this idea about if ground could be stolen. And hence, it comes out, since ground cannot be stolen, so even if you pick them up and throw them out, you're not stealing it, it's not stolen, you just might be forcing a way of borrowing, so to speak. And therefore, it's a sukkah sh'ulihi, and sukkah sh'ulihi is not a problem, you can fulfill your chiyuv in the borrowed sukkah, that we learn now from Kol Ezrach. So Rav Nachman says, that's the case when they argue regarding a sukkah gzula, stolen sukkah. But if the person stole wood, and then he used it to make a sukkah out of it, now, this is neither the case of stolen or borrowed, because essentially what this is that you actually acquired these woods with what's called Shina Maisa. You changed it, you cut it down to size to build it in the sukkah. You changed the name. It's not just wood anymore. It actually has the name of Schach of a sukkah. Another reason is that the person who acquires it is because what's called Takanas HaShavim, which the Gemara later on will illustrate this halacha, which is it was the institution to allow those to do tshuva, that we don't require him to demolish his whole house if he used this piece of wood, and it's somewhere in the pivotal place of the structure. If you're going to make him take it out to return it, he's not going to want to do tshuva because he says, I'm not pulling apart my whole house. Rather, in such a case, the halacha is going to be divrei hakol in le'ela d'me'etzim. Everyone would agree that the only thing you have to do is return the monetary value of the wood to the person that was stole from. And Rashi says, although the Gemara said on the previous Perek and Perek HaYashin that Rabban agree by a stolen sukkah that it is possible, they only say that a borrowed sukkah you could be Yetzer. So how are we saying that according to everybody, if you steal the wood and you make a sukkah out of it, that you could fulfill your chiv that way, you just have to return the money? So that Rashi explains, that's not talking about the two cases our Gemara is talking about. It's not talking about when you steal a sukkah, meaning that when it's attached to the ground, you just chuck him out. And neither is it talking about when you steal wood and you use it to make a sukkah out of it. Because that is, as we explained, the first case of when you just send them out, that karka ain't nigzelis, so it's considered a borrowed sukkah, so that you can fill yechiv. And neither is it talking about the second case of stealing wood, because that is not from stolen, because that was then transferred through the yish and the shinui, which then makes it totally yours. It's not from something that was stolen. Rather, the case of a stolen sukkah that they agree on, that one will not fulfill his chiv, is talking about that if, let's say, a sukkah was made on top of a wagon or on top of a ship, where then the sukkah itself actually is stolen because it's not attached to the ground. If the sukkah is made on regular ground, so then it's mechubal karka, so we say it has halacha like karka itself, and therefore it cannot be stolen. But here, when the sukkah is on a movable item, so it sukkah itself could be stolen, and therefore they were going to say that the one will not fulfill his chiv. However, regarding the case that we're talking about with stealing the wood, there's halacha of takanas hashavim, but that you don't have over there when the sukkah is built on top of the wagon or on top of the ship. Because, first of all, there was no effort put into building it. He didn't put in any efforts and put in any investment. And it's a movable thing which could be stolen. Hence, that is the classic sukkah gezula. Yes, Rabban would agree that a sukkah gezula, one does not fulfill his chiyuv, is just regarding sukkah sh'ula that they do. Or like the second case of when one steals the wood and then changes it, where that wasn't the original item that was stolen, and also that's what's considered takanas hashavim. We don't owe the investment that was put into making the sukkah for that one piece of wood. I got to return. I'm going to have to demolish the whole sukkah. Someone's not going to want to have to do tshuva. That doesn't apply to the case on the previous parak where you just stole the sukkah. You took the wagon and you ran away, where it's not attached to the ground. Hence, it could be stolen. And there is also no nekuda of takanas hashavim because you didn't invest anything. You just ran away with the wagon. There, the Rabban would agree that one will not fulfill his chiyuv in the sukkah gzula. Now, the Gemara asks on this interpretation of Rav Nachman, Mimai, from where do we know that the argument they had regarding the sukkah gzula was regarding when it's attached to the ground, and their machlekes was if one can steal ground or not, and the reason is because regarding a borrowed sukkah, if we say that, let's say, a sukkah cannot be, a karka cannot be stolen. So hence it comes out, the machlekes Rabbalazar and the Rabbanan is basically, can one fulfill his chiyuv with a sukkah shula or not? Because again, the sukkah gzula Rabbanan agree that when you actually steal the sukkah, when it's not attached to the ground, you cannot fulfill his chiyuv, like we said, if it's on a wagon or on a ship. So hence it comes down to that when it's going to be borrowed or not, that is the machlekes. How do we know that? So that the Gemara says that Rav Nachman understood it, midiktani dumi d'rishas Ram, because there were two cases discussed in the Braisa. One was a case of when you make a sukkah, you just set up shop in Rosh Hashanah, public domain, stealing the ground of the public, and the case of sukkah gezula. Now, therefore, we make a comparison. Ma Rosh Hashanah bim karka lav didehu, just like when you're making a sukkah in the public domain, that's not your ground. Sukkah nami lav karka didehu. So we make the comparison that the case of the stolen sukkah was talking about also land that's not yours, meaning it was his land. Oh, it's on his land, that means the sukkah is attached to the ground, which is his land. That makes it a case of karka ein nigzelis. That's the Rabbanan's opinion, where they argue under Belaz and they say, look, all it is going to be like a borrowed sukkah because it cannot be stolen. It's something that's attached to the ground. The ground can't be stolen. Therefore, that's our machlekes. We hold kol ha'ezuch includes that you could sit in a borrowed sukkah, and you hold that not. And you might even hold karka ein nigzelis, and therefore, for sure, that's not going to be tas l'cha. But essentially, that's what it boils down to. However, if it was actually a stolen sukkah, everyone would agree, as we said in the previous paragraph. And if it was wood that was stolen, and that wood was then changed into the structure of the sukkah, they would agree that it would be a kosher sukkah, and all you would have to do would be have to return the monetary value to the person that was stolen from. As the Gemara illustrates with the following story. Hahi Safta, there was this elderly woman that the servants of the Rish Galusa, who was in charge of all the people in Gullus and Bavel, they stole her wood, and they made a sukkah out of it. Dasila came into Rav Nachman, so she came in front of Rav Nachman. So Amrle, she told him, Resh Galusa, I just want you to know something. The one in charge of all the people in exile, the Kul Rabban the Resh Galusa, and all the rabbis who they come to the Resh Galusa, Besukka Gizul Havayasi, they're sitting in a stolen sukkah. So Tzavchasha, she was screaming that they should have to return to her piece of wood that was stolen. Vilayashka Poy Rav Nachman. Rav Nachman didn't pay attention to her. Amrle, so she told him, Itza Dehavale Lavua. A woman, meaning a reference to herself, that her father had, Tlas Mei of Atamnisri Abdi, had 318 servants, which was a reference to Avram Avinu, who the Yelide Besai, who the people in his household, as the Pasuk says, were 318. Tzavcha Kamaychu, she's screaming in front of you, Vulash Kechisuban, you're not paying attention to her? What do you mean not paying attention to me? I come from nobility, from royalty, from Avram Avinu. What do you mean? Why aren't you giving me back my wood? So Amalahu Rav Nachman, Rav Nachman said to his students, Pa'isa Hida, this woman is someone that makes loud noises. She's a crier. She's a screamer. The only thing she has is she gets the monetary value of the wood. She's right. They did something wrong. They stole it. But they're not sitting in the sukkah gezula. According to everybody, they're fulfilling their chiyuv, and she doesn't get her wood back. They just have to pay her the money of what was stolen. And that's what's called a tekans chachamim, that we had alluded to this before, regarding when there was a beam that was stolen, which was built into the structure of a mansion, of a big building, where we say that the one that was stolen from, all he gets is the money. We don't require the thief to have to uproot his whole mansion to give back the one beam. And that's what's called Mesechtes Gittin, Afna Ne'eman Av, what's called Takanas Hashavim. This was instituted to allow people to do tshuva. If you're going to say for him to do tshuva would be to have to return that stolen object, he's not going to do tshuva. It's too much. It's asking too much. He's going to have to rip apart his whole palace to get that one beam out. Therefore, we instituted, he only has to give back the monetary value. And the same thing applies over here to the halacha of sukkah, to rip apart the whole sukkah, to give this old lady back her piece of wood, that we didn't require that. Now, related to this, Amar Avina, he says, Hai keshura de metalalta de gzula, as we said before, that this beam for a sukkah that was stolen, avdi le rabban takanta, the rabbanan made this institution to take the monetary value and only give the money back, but not to have to give back that wood itself, Mishum Takana's marsh, because the Takana, the institution of the crossbeam. And as we just explained this halacha before, now the chiddush of this is that we don't say that, look, you have to rip apart a whole building for that one piece of wood that was stolen. Obviously, he's asking too much. But however, we would think to say maybe by sukkah it's not such a great loss and you should demolish your sukkah. And that is what that Ravina was saying, that no, that the mitzvah mandates that this sukkah for 7 days is like a binyan keva, it's like your house for now. We don't require you to rip apart your house, because although it's just a hut, but for the days of sukkah, this is your house. We don't make you rip apart your house to return the piece of wood, and therefore we say you could just give back the money. Now that the Gemara has pshita. That's obvious, this chiddush, because Maishnami eats him. Why is it any different from the case of wood? That is, we just said before that if someone steals wood and he uses it to cover in his sukkah, that the person that it was stolen from only gets the money. So why would this be any different when you're taking a beam to make the sukkah? Why would that be any worse than just taking a piece of wood to use as schach or other things? Where here it's more solid in the sense of that it's a beam holding up the sukkah. So that the Gemara says actually not, because I would have thought to say that we'll utilize this takana of hashavim, of the marish, in the case of when it's just wood, because wood is commonly found. Hence, the one that it was stolen from, the victim, if you give him money or her money, they can use the money to purchase more wood because you can find wood. And therefore, we'll utilize the takana hashavim because it's not something that's going to be challenging for the one that was stolen from, and therefore we're not matriach, we don't make the thief go through that great effort of demolishing the whole sukkah. Because, again, the one that was stolen from could go ahead and buy more wood. Aval hai, lo yishchicha, but regarding this beam where it's not so commonly found, emulai would say not. There, although it's more solid for the sukkah, but again, the sukkah is not one's home. And therefore, since it's going to be very difficult for the victim to have to go ahead and find such a beam, we would say that we would not say takanas hamarish, k'mashmalim. That was the chiddush of Avinu. Then no, since this is my house for these 7 days, we will utilize takanas hamarish. And therefore, although it's more difficult than wood, still we're going to utilize that takana and say that you just have to give back money and you don't have to give back the beam itself. Now, however, the Gemara qualifies this halacha. This halacha of Ravina was only within the 7 days of Sukkot. But after the 7 days of Sukkot are over, now this is not your home anymore, it's just, quote, a hut, then you have to give back the beam itself. Yes, you would have to take apart the sukkah and give it back because you don't have any more the utility of takanas hamarish. However, the chibre betina, if that this beam was attached with cement, then it's like, it's not just a hut, it's like a full-fledged house. Then even after the 7 days of Sukkot, this is like a permanent structure, then again, you would utilize Takan Samarish, and you'd only have to give back the money, and not the beam itself. Now, the Gemara continues from the halachas of our Mishnah, which we spoke about up until now, lulav ha-gazel. The second case was lulav ha-yavish, a dried-out lulav. So, Tanu, we learned the Braisa, yavish pasal, as our Mishnah said, that a dried-out lulav is invalid. However, Behuda Machshir, Behuda says, although it's not mentioned in our Mishnah, he says that it's going to be kasher. So Amar Rava, Rava qualifies their machlokes, and he says machlokes belulav. Their machlokes was regarding a lulav, as is the case that our mission is talking about. The Rabbanan savri makshin a lulav the esrig. The Rabbanan say that we compare a lulav to esrig, and that is ma esrig by a hadar, just like an esrig needs beauty, as the pasuk actually calls it. It's called a pre-eats hadar. So af lulav by a hadar, so too a lulav needs hadar. The Yehuda savri, Yehuda holds le makshin lulav esrig holds. No, we do not compare the lulav to the esrig, and that is there is no such hekesh. There's no gezeir shava. There's no comparison one to the other, and we can't learn that out from ourselves because none of the yud gilded midas shatar nedeshes ben can we use on our own if it's not from mesayra only a kavuchaymer. And therefore, since we don't have any mesayra on that, we don't compare a lulav to esrig, and therefore that's why he says it's kasher. Of be esrig divyak kol hadar beinan. However, regarding an esrig, there, even Rabbi Huda would agree that it has to be hadar, and therefore, when it says in the Braisa, Yavish, that they have a machlekes, that wasn't talking about an esrig, because the esrig, Rabbi Huda agrees, it has to be hadar, as the pasuk says. And rather, the whole machlekes was regarding the case of lulav. Now, Rashi explains what would be the havamin that to say that Rabbi Huda argues on esrig, if the pasuk calls it hadar, that should be beautiful. And that is that what it means to say is that he doesn't make the drasha, as Ben Azai says on the Gemara later on, Laflam Haman Aleph, that he says that the word hadr is from the Greek eder, which means something else. Therefore, we would say that maybe esrig also does not require hadr. And that Rava says that no, their machlik is only regarding lulav, but regarding esrig, Rabbi Yehuda would agree that it would be puzzle if it wouldn't be hadr in the sense that if it would be yavish, it would be dried out. Now, the Gemara asks, Ubalulav loy boy Rabbi Yehuda hadr, is it really true that regarding a lulav, as the Braisa says, Rabbi Yehuda does not require hadar, but nan, we learned in our Mishnah said, Rabbi Yehuda says regarding a different halacha of nifridu alav, when the leaves of the lulav start branching out, so the Tanakama said that it's going to be kosher because it's not totally detached. Rabbi Yehuda said, yegdenu melmala, but you should tie it on the top that it should go straight up together with the shedra, with the spine of the lulav itself. Now, my time, or what would be the reason that it would require it to be tied up on the top? La mishum de bayahadr, isn't it because he requires it to be beautiful? And if it's all branching out, it's not. There's no beauty to the lulav. So how can we say that he holds Yavish is going to be kosher because he doesn't require it to be Hadar? But yet, he says clearly in that Mishnah, it seems that you do require Hadar, and that's why it has to be tied up on the top. Another thing where it says Loi. No, the reason why he holds it has to be tied up on the top is not because of Hadar. Kadiktaning time, that's as is learned elsewhere, where Behuda Imrish Reb Tarfin, Behuda said a name of Reb Tarfin that is a pasuk in Vayikra, which describes the lulav. It's called Kapas Tamar, which is commonly translated as the fronds, the branches that come out of the palm tree. That's what the lulav is. Now, and that the drasha is not kapos, which are the palms, which is the term for the branches, but rather kafos, bound, tied. What that means is v'im hayapard, and if it was separated, yichvasena, then you should tie it together. So that's a totally different halacha, nothing to do with hadar. And that essentially Behuda holds that one does not require hadar. And that's how Rav explains why he holds that if it's going to be dry, it's going to be kosher. He says that by lulav, you have to tie it up on the top. That's not because so it should be beautiful. That's for a different halacha. That's because of kapos tamar, means to say kafos tamar, that they have to be tied together. Now, the Gemara continues to ask, is it really true, the way Rav is explaining his halacha, that Yavish will be kosher because it doesn't require hadar? But Vatnan, we learn in the Mishnah later on, that says, we do not bind the lulav together, which are the three different minim, which are the hadasim, the aravis, and the lulav, only with the same type of what it's being bound in. In other words, the lulav. Div Rabbi Huda, that's the opinion of Rabbi Huda. You can't bind it with anything else. Now, my time is like Moses says, what's the reason that it has to be with the same min? La mishum de bayahada is because that should be beautiful. If you can use something else to wrap it around, let's say string or something else, then it's not beautiful. It's only if it's from the same type that you bind, that what's being bound, you're binding with that, that's beauty. Why else would it require the same min? And therefore we see that it does require hadu by lulav. Nothing where it says loy, no. That's also for a different reason. Dama Rava, because Rava said, Afilibasiv, Rabbi Yehuda holds actually that you could tie up the lulav even with the vine that grows around the palm tree itself, which are similar to the ivy that grows around by grapevines. And Vafilibaker the Dikla, one could even use from the bark of the tree itself, of the lulav tree. Now, even there, where the look will not have the same look as the lulav, as long as it's from the same min, then it's going to be kosher. Because the reason of Rabbi Huda is not because it has to be hadar, as we see that's not adding any hadar to the lulav by tying it together with something, even though it's the same min, but it looks totally different, and therefore it has nothing to do with hadar. So the Gemara has to be Elamai Tam de Behuda Hasim. So then what is the reason of Rabbi Huda? If we're not accomplishing hadar, so why does it have to be with the same min? So that the Gemara says, the kasavra lulav tzarech agad. The reason is because Rabbi Huda holds that the lulav has to be bound. Therefore, whatever is bound with what you're binding with is part of the mitzvah. Now, v'imaisa min achrina, if you can bring some other type, other species, to tie up the lulav, havlu chamisha minim, that's going to be that you're not going to have just dal minim of the esrog and then these three that are bound together. You're going to have five. Because you're going to have that thing that you're binding it with, which is part of the mitzvah, because the lulav tzarech eged, and therefore you're going to be over on bal taisif if you're going to tie it with some other fifth min, and that's the reason. It's nothing to do with beauty. It just has to do with a different halacha of bal taisif, because since it's intrinsic to the mitzvah, the binding, it would be considered as one of the another min if it was something else. So the Gemara resolved that, and we could be like Rav said, that Yerida holds that lulav does not need hadar. And these other halachas have different reasons why he holds that you have to bind it because of kafis, and why you have to have the halacha of binding it with the same min is because of baltaisip. Now the Gemara asks in the other direction. Estrig mi by Rabbi Huda hadar, is it really true like Rava? However, that Rabbi Huda would agree regarding the estrig that it does have to be beautiful. But Vatani Lin the Braisa, it says, Arbas minim shabalulam, the four different types that are used with the mitzvah of lulav. So kashem she'en peichs in them, just like you can't use less than four, kachem esiv in alein, so too, you can't add on to them, you can't have more than four, you can't have five, and so on. Now, the Braiser continues, loy matze esrig, but what do you do if you don't find esrig? There's no esrig to be found, so you're not going to have the dal minim. So the Braiser says, loy yavi, you shouldn't bring in place of that. Loy parish, not a quince, v'loy rima, not a pomegranate, v'loy devacha, nothing else should take its place. You don't have an esrig, don't use something else that looks like an esrig or would have the same shape as an esrig. Now, the Braisa continues, Kamushin ksherin, if it's withered, it's kosher. Yaveshim psuim, but if it's dry, it's invalid. Yehuda Eimer, after Yaveshim, he says that even if the lulav is dried up, it's going to be kosher. Rabbi Yehuda says, I'll prove to you that if it's dried, it's kosher. Because Maisa, there was a time, there was a story, Bivnei Krachin, by the people from the cities, which they didn't live out in the rural areas by where there were pardes and there was orchards, and they didn't have palm trees to acquire these lulavin. That they would inherit their lulavim to their grandchildren. They would continue giving it over, and therefore, even though it was from years before, so in spite of the fact that it was dry, you see that that's what they would do, and therefore you see that if it's dried, it's kosher. So Amrulai, they said to him, Misham Raya, from there it's a proof. Ain't Shasatzchak Raya. There's no proof from a dire situation. And there were no lulavim, what were they supposed to do? And therefore they gave it over. But the halacha l'ketchila would definitely not be the way you're saying, but rather the lulav that's yavish would be possible. Now, ketani mias, however, so this was the brayso that we introduced. But one thing that we see is Rabbi Yehuda Omer av yaveshin k'sherim. Rabbi Yehuda said that even if it's dry, it's kosher. Now, we didn't say what they were talking about. My lava esrig doesn't make sense. That's going back on what actually the brayso was told right before that, when they were saying if you don't have an esrig, so don't use this or that. And then went on to say the halacha of yevation that Rabbi Yehuda says kosher. So you see that he holds that you don't need to have the halacha of hadr, as you see that you could have it dried out by an esrig. I think Mar says, "Lo, it's not a question on Rava, because actually a lulav, it's not going on the case of esrig. It was talking about regarding a lulav that's dried out, and now we know he doesn't compare the lulav to esrig, and therefore it doesn't have to be hadr. But regarding esrig, it would be like Rava that the esrig would have to be hadr." I'm a master. The Gemara says, once we introduce the brisa, so it says in the brisa, "Shem chein peichsin mehem," just like you shouldn't do less than the dal minim, "kach in mesivin lein soto," you shouldn't have more than dal minim. So the Gemara says, "Pshit," it's pretty obvious. We know this halacha bal teisa, bal tigra. You're not allowed to add on to a mitzvah, not take away from a mitzvah. What's the chiddush that you can't have more just so you can have less? So that the Gemara says, "Madu teima hoyel v'am Rabbi Yehuda." I would have thought to say that since Rabbi Yehuda says, as we mentioned before, lulav tzarech eged, a lulav has to be bound. It's part of the mitzvah. It's intrinsic. V'i ma'isim min achrina. Now, if you bring a different type, which is not bound together with the lulav and the aravas and the hadasim, then I would say, these are its own thing. These are its own thing, and therefore it wouldn't be an Isra of Bal Taisev because it doesn't combine, because it's not bound together. That's the Chiddush. Even if you didn't bind it together with the Lulav and Hadas and the Ravis, still it would be a problem of just like you can't do less, you can't do more, and it would be a problem of Bal Taisev. So another thing that was mentioned in the Braisa by the Master was, Loi Matze Estrik. So if you don't find an Estrik, Lo yavi, you shouldn't bring loy rima, not a pomegranate, but loy parish, not a quince, but loy devacha, nothing else. Don't try to do a substitute for the esrig. So Gemara's pshita, pretty obvious. The Torah says esrig. Why would I think you use something else? So that the Gemara says, madu tema lesi, I would think to say that you should use something else to take its place. So that the halachas of esrig should not be forgotten. If, let's say, one's in an area where they don't allow esrigim, and for many years not going to be an esrig, people are going to think, you know, Sukkot comes along, you take a lulav hadasim and a rabbis, and no estrig, they would totally forget the halachas. And therefore, I would think to say, use a substitute, so people remember there is another min that should be taken over here, albeit we can't have an estrig. Kamash Shalom, that's the chiddush of the braisa, that no, don't do that. Because zimna denafik chuvim, actually, many times it come out something destructive with that. The asl misach, because people are going to get used to that, people will actually think, you know what it means to take dal minim, lulav aravim hadasim, and an apple. Because that's what people had, and people will forget, they'll think actually that's the mitzvah. So the chiddush is, don't take any substitutes, because it might cause a churva from that people might think that actually is what the mitzvah is supposed to be. So Gemara goes back, Tashma, let's bring a proof regarding this that Rava said, that Rabbi Yehuda only argues on Yavish, that it's going to be kosher by lulav, because he doesn't hold it has to be hadr. But by Estrig, as the Pasuk says, then it has to be hadr. However, the Gemara brings a brayse that says, Estrig ha-yoshin pasal. An old estrig is invalid. Rabbi Yehuda Machsh, Rabbi Yehuda says an old estrig is kosher. So to Yufta de Rava, that should seem to be a refutation of Rava, who an old estrig is not beautiful, and yet still Rabbi Yehuda says kosher. That the Gemara says to Yufta, yes, that's a refutation of Rava, as we see that not only does Rabbi Yehuda not require hadr by lulav, he even doesn't require hadr by an estrig. Now, the Gemara asks, b'loi boy hadr? Are you saying that he doesn't require hadr? But vanantnan, but we learn the Mishnah later on, which talks about the halachas of estrig, that says, hayarik kakarti. If someone has an estrig that's green like leek, Rabbi Meir Machsher, Meir says that's a kosher estrig. Rabbi Yehuda Paiser, Rabbi Yehuda says that's going to be an invalid estrig. Now, lav mishum deboy hadr, obviously it's because it would seem that it has to be beautiful, and a green estrig like leek is not beautiful. And therefore we see Rabbi Yehuda holds that there is a halach of hadr by estrig. I think Meir says, that's not true. That's for a different reason. That's just because if it's green like leek, that means it's not yet fully matured and ripened, and that's why it's not yellow, and that's why it's going to be invalid, but not because of hadar. Again, the Gemara brings Tashma from that Mishnah over there, which says, another machlekes. Shir Esther cotton, what is the minimum size of how small an Esther can be? Rimeyar Mikeegas, he says the size of a walnut. Rimeyar Mikebe, he says the size of an egg. Now, so Rimeyar requires a little bit bigger. La Mishim Debay Hada isn't because it has to be beautiful, and something as so small as the size of a walnut, that's not a beautiful thing. The size of an egg is already beautiful. So you see, he requires Hada by Esther. The Gemara says, no, again, like it was before, Loi Mishum Dulei Goma Peir. No, the reason is because if it's only the size of a walnut, it has not yet fully matured, and that's why it's possible. It's not a complete peiri, but not because of Halach of Hadr. Again, the Gemara continues, Tashma, again from that Mishnah over there. It says, Ubegadol, Machlik is of how large an Esther could be. So the first opinion there says, Kedei Sheyeches Shnayim B'yodei Achas Derei B'Huda. B'Huda says that it has to be, it can't be bigger. It has to be the size of that you could hold two esroigim in one hand. And that is, if one it would want to then hold the lulav in place of where the second ester would be, that is the size of how big the ester could be, so that you could hold two in one hand. Therefore, if let's say you're holding just one ester, you could hold the lulav and the ester in the same hand. B'yisim, he says, no, afil echad b'shtei yadav. He says, no, even it could be so big that even if you're holding one ester in two hands, that's how big it could be. Now, so the Gemara says, my time, oh, what's the reason of Rabbi Yehuda that he holds that it can't be bigger than having two in one hand? Lab Mishum Debayi Hadr isn't because it requires the Esrik to be beautiful. Such a large one is way too big. It doesn't even look nice. But if you have the size of half a hand, that you can have two in one hand, that's because then it'll be beautiful. So you see that Rabbi Yehuda requires Allah of Hadr for Esrik. The Gemara says again, Loi, no, it's not. It's like we said before, it's not like Rava. Actually, Rabbi Yehuda holds that there is no Allah of Hadr by Esrik. Now, the reason why it has to be that size is Kivin Amar Rabbah, since Rabbah said that the halacha requires lulav b'yamin ve'esrik b'smol, the lulav with the Arab and Hadassim are in the right hand, and the esrik is in the left hand. The reason is because that has three mitzvahs together, and the esrik is only one mitzvah, so we give priority to the lulav, which has three mitzvahs in the right hand. Now, Zimnin d'mechalfi lay. Now, since that's the halacha that requires that order, to having the lulav in the right hand, the esrik in the left hand, it could happen that a person will mix it up, and by mistake he'll put his esrog in his right hand and his lulav in his left hand. Now, va'asi lafachinu, he's going to come to switch it around from one hand to the other hand, and he's going to hold the esrog and the lulav in one hand when he's manipulating to switch from one hand to the other hand. Now, if the esrog was too big, it might fall down when he's transferring it. Va'asi lafsulin, it's going to come invalid because it's going to get a hole in it. That's why it requires that it should be the size of two in one hand, just so that you could have, in place of that second esrog, a lulav, so you could hold them both in one hand at the same time, because if it's bigger than that, it might fall out, and it's going to become possible, so nothing to do with the halach of hadr, just because of a concern of the esrog becoming possible. But now the Gemara asks what would be called a bomb question. Okay, fine, so we were able to resolve the different opinions of Rabbi Yehuda from the other Mishnah. But Vel Rabbi Yehuda, Hoksiv Hadr, the Pasuk says, pre-eats hadr, a fruit of that's beautiful. So how can you say that it doesn't have halacha of hadar? That the Gemara says, hahu, that word hadar is actually read hadar. It's hadar bi'iloni mishana l'shana. It's the fruit that lives, that dwells on its tree from year to year. And as Rashi says, actually, this is where we know that this fruit refers to an esrog, because there is no other fruit that does what the esrog does. That it could stay there from year to year to year, which we don't have by other produce. That's how we know actually that it's an esrog. That's what hadar means. It doesn't mean beautiful. It means that it lives there from year to year, and that's why there is no halacha of hadar according to Rabbi Yehuda, not only by lulav, but even by esrog. Not like Rava, who he said that it's only by lulav that he argues that you don't compare it to esrog, but by esrog, which it says hadar, then you do have. And they're saying, no, there is no halacha whatsoever of hadar by esrog, and therefore, for sure, there's no halacha of hadar by lulav. Now, the Mishnah said regarding the halachas of lulav, other invalidations, shel asher v'shel iran nedachas, regarding an Asherah tree, which is that the tree itself is worshipped as Avodah Zarah, or the tree of what's called an ear that's pushed away, which is that the majority of the city inhabitants served Avodah Zarah from people from their own city who's incited them to do Avodah Zarah, those trees are going to be invalid to use their lulavim as a lulav for sukkahs. Now, the Gemara asks on the first case, Vishal Asherah Pasul, is it really true that the lulavim of an Asherah tree, where the tree was served as Avodah Zarah, is Pasul? But Vama Rava said, Lulav Shalavai Dezara, Lulav that was used in the service of an idol worshipping. For example, let's say the lulav was used to sweep up in front of the Avodah Zarah, or if its actual service was with a lulav, which is to wave it in front of the idol or to throw it in front of the idol, then lo yitl. So Rava said that one should not use such a lulav as the mitzvah of lulav on sukkahs, because that's disgusting for Hashem to use something which was used for idols. But vimnat l'kasher, if it was used, it will be kasher, because although something that was used in the service of a desire is considered isuri hanom, it's forbidden to have pleasure out of it. But there's another klal of mitzvahs lav lahanes nenu. Mitzvahs are not considered deriving pleasure from them, and therefore it's not considered as if you're having pleasure from the actual lulav itself. Rather, you're just serving your master Hashem, and therefore, although yes, it's disgusting to use such a lulav, however, one will, after the fact, consider it kasher if he went and used such a lulav that was used in the service of Avodah Zarah for the mitzvah of lulav. Now, that contradicts what it says in our Mishnah, that an asherah is going to be pasul. We see Rava says that's not. It will be kasher. So that the Gemara answers that there's the difference between Rava's case and our Mishnah. Hacha, the case of our Mishnah, was Bashir de Moshe Skin. We were talking about the Asheri in the times of Moshe Rabbeinu. That is, when they went to conquer Eretz Yisrael, the Torah required that those trees which was served as Avodah Zarah to be burnt, as the Pasuk says in Devarim Yudbeis, Vashireim Tisrefun Be'esh. Their Asheri, their idol trees, should be burnt in fire. Now, a lulav requires, as we said in our Mishnah, a certain measurement. And such a tree, such a lulav from such a tree, is d'chsusei michse shireh, is as if that its measurement is totally grinded down. It's like it's pulverized, because since it's intended for burning, we don't view it as if, just like ashes, don't have any measurement, it's totally disintegrated. So too, this tree, although it seems to have a shear, halachically we view it as if it doesn't have a shear, because it's totally burnt, although not yet, but since that's where it's oimid, it's going to be, so we view it as if it's that now also, and therefore the lulav doesn't have a shear, and that's why it's going to be pasul. Versus the case that Rav is talking about is not talking about the asheri tree in the times of when they were conquering Eretz Yisrael, which although it's disgusting and you not have enough from it, but mitzvahs are lav lahanes, and therefore it will be kasher if one uses such a lulav. The Gemara says deken nami. Actually, a precise reading will indicate that is the case of our Mishnah, the Ketan that we learned in our Mishnah. Dumi, the Iran Nidachas. There were two cases that said side by side, the case of Asherah and Iran Nidachas, where the halacha is same thing by the Iran Nidachas, where all their trees, all their things have to be burnt. Shmami, no, we can infer that the halacha of Asherah, the reason why it's possible is also because it's going to be burnt, not because of a desire per se, but because it's going to be burnt, and therefore we consider as if there is no measurement to it as something would be when it's burnt, and that's why it's going to be possible, because it doesn't have the shear, but not because of Avodah Zarah. Actually, because of Avodah Zarah, that Rav says that one, it would be kosher, although one shouldn't, it would be kosher if one used the lulav Avodah Zarah for the mitzvah of lulav on the Yom Tov HaSukkos. Now, our Mishnah said, continuing on the halachas of invalidations of the lulav, it says, Niktam Reisha, if the tip of the lulav was cut off, such a lulav is possible. Now the Gemara qualifies this halacha. Amar Avuna. Avuna says, "Loi shanu." We didn't learn this invalidation ela niktam, only if it was totally cut off. Aval nistak. But if the top leaves of the lulav were split, then kasha. Then the lulav would be kasha. Only if it was cut off. If it's split, it's going to be kasha. Now the Gemara asks on that qualification of Avuna. The nistak kasha. Is it really true if the leaves are split, then it's going to be kasha? But Vatani, we learn the brayso regarding other invalidations of the lulav. It says as follows: lulav kaf. A bent over lulav, which is the halacha of what's called ki'agmoin, which is when it's bent over like a fishhook, which is similar to a person that's what's called a hunchback, or an elderly person where their heads are bent over and the whole thing is bent over. That's one case. And we continue the top of lamed bezim et alf, or the case of lulav that's kavutz, where it comes out from the top of the shedra, of the spine of the lulav, comes out different pointy things like thorns. Or sadduk, or if the lulav is split, or akum doimel magal, or if it's bent over in the shape of a sickle, then pasul, such a lulav is going to be pasul. Similarly, charis, if the lulav is hard, which is called charoyis, it became hard like regular branches, because that's how the lulav tree actually works. The lulav is that the leaves fall off of the lulav itself during the winter months. And then the spine, which is called the shedra, becomes hard and becomes like a piece of wood, which becomes like a branch. Then pasul, then that's going to be pasul to be used as a lulav. However, if it's only similar to charis, which is that it started getting hard, but it didn't become like a piece of wood yet, then kasher, then it will still be kasher to be used as a lulav. However, the question of the Gemara is, on Rav Huna, we see that a case of sadik when it's split is possible. How could Rav Huna say it's only if nikdam is possible, but sadik would be kasher? So Amar Papa, Rav Papa explains, he says, this that we learned in the Braisa, that sadik when it's split is possible, is not talking about the case of Rav Huna, where we were talking about the top, where the top leaves or the spine of the lulav was split open. Rather, he says, it's the ovid kehimnik. It's that when the top of the lulav was made like a himnik. Now, a himnik actually is a type of a utensil which the scribes use. It's made out of iron, which they use to make the lines, what's called sirtu. They make the holes in the cloth, in the parchment, which it has two tops, which one top goes off from the other direction, almost like a Y shape, and that is, it goes up straight, and then one goes one direction, the other one goes the other direction. That's what we mean when we're talking about this lulav that's pasul in the braisa, when it's sadik, when it's split, it's almost like it has two different shedrois, two different spines, half the leaves are going one direction, half the leaves going the other direction. That's very clear discrepancy. That's like a hemnik, that's going to be pasul. But just when there's a split on the top leaves, that's like Rav Huna, that such a lulav actually would not be possible. Now, the Braisa mentioned that akum deim lamagel, that one of the cases of an invalid lulav is when it's bent over like a sickle. So Amar Rava, Rava qualifies this halacha. He says, lo yimarin el lafanab. We didn't say that's going to be possible only if it's bent over in front of it. In other words, the direction facing opposite from the spine. That is, the spine of the lulav, what we always call the shedra, is made like the spine of an animal, where you have the different ribs and the different bones that are attached to it coming out on either side. And the middle is smooth and goes up like a stick. That's called the shedra. That's the part that a person holds toward himself. So if it's bent over like a sickle, facing away from the spine, in front, where the leaves are, then that's what's going to be pasul. Avala achrav. But if it's bent backward towards the spine, then briyasahu, then actually it won't be pasul, it'll be kasher, because that's actually the normative way of the creation of the lulav, that it bends backward, and such a case would be kasher. Amar Rav Nachman, Rav Nachman qualifies, he says, let's daden, if it's bent like a sickle to the sides, so there's two different versions. First version says, kilafon abdami, then it's like when it bends over like a sickle away from the spine, towards the front, which would be pasul. Varmilan, some say actually, kilach abdami, that's the same as going backward, which would be kasher. Those are two different versions. V'amar Rav, another halacha from Rava, in this halachas of lulav, he says, "Hai lulava de salik b'char hutzu." This lulav, that according to Rashi's interpretation, means to say that it goes up like one leaf. In other words, that all the leaves are on one side of the lulav. Ba'mumhu upasal. Such a lulav is going to be considered invalid, and because it's considered blemished, because a lulav generally has on both sides, if it's only coming on one side, that's considered ba'mum, and therefore such a lulav is going to be pasul.